Well, hey there, everybody. It's time now for When We Wake. I'm your host, Andrew Shaver, and you have got me for just under 60 minutes. And on today's episode, I have a wake-up call with singer-songwriter Leroy Stagger. Leroy's new album, Pilgrimage, is, well, exactly that. It is a journey through loss, rebuilding, family, and finding your way back to yourself. The album was co-produced with the Duke of Dartmouth himself, Joel Plaskett, and Leroy talks beautifully about his deep admiration for Joel's fearlessness in the studio, his refusal to settle for anything less than what the song demands, pushing and reshaping it until it feels right. We talk about the flood that destroyed Leroy's studio in 2021 and how that loss became a strange kind of a gift, giving him time with his father during cancer treatment as they both built his new creative home. We get into touring, fatherhood, anxiety, ADHD, and the rituals that now keep Leroy grounded, from meditation to gardening to the inspiration he found in Alistair McIntosh's Soil and Soul. Here's my conversation with Leroy Stagger. Leroy!
Hey, Andrew. How you doing?
I'm excellent.
Oh, you got your 45 Portland Street shirt on.
Man, that's for the listeners here. You just saw like the top 1/8 of the shirt and knew what it was. Look at you.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I can see the top 1/8 of your shirt. Now, what? They're pigs.
You ever hear that band Mipso from New
yes,
York?
Yes, of course, yeah, I have.
It's a Mipso shirt.
There you go.
I played with them in Sweden somewhere. And
excellent.
Yeah.
Played like with like on the same bill or played in
yeah on the same bill yeah
cool man
yeah
right on. Now you're in a cool looking studio space right there.
Yeah, I'm in my studio.
Yeah, look at that.
Yeah,
many hours logged in that space, huh?
Yeah.
Now is that that's a rebuilt studio, hey? Because like talk about on Lost in the Flood, you lost your studio in a flood.
Yeah. Yeah, so the old studio was in the basement of our house, and it was a great studio. I really liked it, actually. It kind of was like a really cozy apartment vibe of a studio, which, you know, I came from a really big studio in Lethbridge, big that I built from the ground up. But then the studio in the basement flooded in 2021 and got destroyed, and I thought, well, there's no way I'm putting it back in there after that.
Yeah, man.
So... you know, our community kind of rallied around us and helped us get set up to build this new space that I'm in right now. And it's attached to the house, but it's a standalone space. It was a parking lot before, so it didn't exist before, which is pretty cool.
Okay, you made something of nothing, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great.
It's a total kind of a blessing in disguise, weirdly.
Yeah, so you've ended up with something that is better than what you had before. And is that what you mean by the blessing in disguise?
Yeah, and there's a couple of different things. Like, A, we lost a lot of stuff, but we realized that it's just stuff. And it was kind of like it felt like a burden lifted, to be honest, getting rid of a lot of these old things that were just kind of in storage. Of course, I lost a couple pieces of gear that I miss, but they've been replaced. And then my dad got sick shortly after the flood, and so he was doing cancer treatments for the year that we built this place, and he didn't work for that year, but he came down and worked with me like every day for like 4 or 5 hours. And so I got to spend lots of time with my dad, which I, you know, never really been able to do. So
because you've been on the road, is that why you haven't been able to do much of that?
Yeah, and I lived away for 15 years. Mm. I lived in southern Alberta for 15 years and then came back to the island in 2020 and thinking like, oh, it'll just be the same place that I left, and it was very different. Parents got older, grandparents got older, brothers got older, and friends moved on, and so it was really kind of nice.
Yeah. So you built this new studio with your dad.
Yeah, a bunch of other family too, and my stepdad too, and but it was a family affair for sure.
Man, that's got to feel good.
Yeah.
No kidding.
It was good, actually. Yeah. My little brother, who had come off a really bad accident, he was in a coma for a long time.
Oh, my goodness.
So really, it was kind of, I hadn't thought about that either. It's like this cosmic gift in a weird, strange way. Mm. Yeah.
How's your brother doing now?
Yeah, he's good. He's a bit of a, yeah, he's funny. But he's great. Yeah. He's working and kind of, you know, fairly back to normal.
Great. And your father?
My dad's good. He's cancer free and he's still working, which he doesn't really, he shouldn't, but he is. So.
We've got similar fathers in that regard. My dad right. also had cancer, is cancer free, and he mm-hmm. is into his 80s now and just will wow. not stop working, man. He is going to Switzerland
really?
On a business trip in a week. It's just like, come on. I get it.
Yeah.
You got to stay active to stay alive in a lot of ways.
I suppose, yeah, but I think that, you know, I suppose the healthy thing is to replace it with a hobby that you really want to do that keeps you active. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, look, he's done that. He spends a lot of time playing fantasy baseball on his computer. Don't
oh,
get me
wow.
wrong.
Okay. That's exciting. Yeah. Cool.
I guess.
Yeah. My dad needs to do something like that.
Yeah. So is your dad on the island? They're all still on the island.
Yeah. My dad, he lives like 3 minutes up the hill from us. And Excellent. My mom is 10 minutes away. My grandparents, I got two sets of grandparents still alive too.
What the heck? No
yeah.
kidding.
Yeah, it's bizarre. You know, it's like, I think people are living longer for better or worse. But my grandma and my poppy live up the street with my dad too. So yeah, it's like really, it went from like, you know, my wife's family in Southern Alberta who are great, but not that close to coming back home to like, aunts and uncles stopping in every week and it's cool. It's
yeah.
cool. I got little kids too. I got a 13-year-old and a 10-year-old. So none of my brothers have kids though. So like there's no cousins, which is kind of a drag.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But some of my, you know, my artist friends have kids. And so that's kind of cool to keep them busy anyway.
Yeah. And when you said little kids, I was about to say, hey, cool, me too. But I got a 4.5 and a 1-year-old. Those are the real little kids.
Yeah, those are really little kids. Yeah, you're right in the thick of that.
Do you remember any of those days?
Yeah, I do. I was traveling a lot when they were that age. But
that must have been tough.
It was really tough. It was really, really tough. I've kind of had to reckon with that in the last couple of years, to be honest, because I really want to, I want to be home as much as possible.
Yeah.
Cause these boys need their dad around and my wife needs me around as well. But also there is this thing that is in the back of my, I don't know where it resides, but it's in me that still, you know, I just got back from 3 weeks on the road, which was mm-hmm. like a week too long. When I was young, I was a road dog. And that was like my badge of honor was how many shows I'd play in a year.
Yeah.
And a lot of my heroes are still out there doing it. But the older I get, the more I realize like it's just not for me anymore. I still like to go out. I love to go out and play and mm-hmm. I love to go out and connect with people. That's what I like the most. And, you know, when you do these tours every year or every year and a half or every 2 years, you go and you see the same people over again. You go and visit friends that you've met along the way.
Sure.
And we're all getting older. And you realize like, okay, I've actually built another family out on the road. Not literally another family.
Do you need to talk to your wife about something here?
Yeah. No, I don't have that. But you know, I've got this found family out in all over the world. And to me, I don't know that I would be willing to not go out there and see them, you know?
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
I get that.
Yeah.
You build relationships, you accumulate people. They're harder to leave than the stuff that you lose in a flood. It's a little easier to get rid of that stuff, huh?
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, the dream is, you know, would be to travel with the family. My 13-year-old is coming to Europe with us next month.
Excellent.
But then the practicality of that is starts to get, the 10-year-old is not, you know, he's not into travel. He likes the idea of it, but, you know, getting up early and traveling all day, that would not appeal to him. But, you know, maybe someday. The 13-year-old, he's really into music and he's really into British music and British culture. So to take him to the UK and was a five-piece band, so he'll be in the van with you know, our bass player Rick. He's 72 years old. This is a cat that's played with Michael Jackson and Ricky Lee Jones and Depeche
Mode. No kidding. Wow.
Yeah, he's so I just like I'm like, get in the van and like
listen.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, let's hear a track off of Leroy Stagger's new album Pilgrimage. This is Lost in the Flood. When We Wait continues with Leroy Stagger after this.
Everything I owe laid out in the gale looks like an eviction, one last rummage sale. When looking for answers, God said to let go. The river kept calling my name. Back to your island on a rope and a wing, and a load from the heavens with a new one to sing. But I lost my words beneath the magnolia tree. It's a long walk, go get them back. I'm lost in the flood, up to my knees, looking for something that nobody sees. I've taken my whole life down to the studs. Alone, death is the bank. Leave what you can, everything's free. I don't need what this world desires. It's taken so long for me to come home. I'll share what I can, save something for my own. The money's been spent, the walls have been built. Till the next time she comes over to the banks, I'm lost in the flood.
Titled Pilgrimage, that is Leroy Stagger with Lost in the Flood. Leroy is my guest on today's episode of When We Wake. And before the tune, we had started chatting about how he was about to hit the road again, something he's done quite a bit of in his career. And that's where we pick up. How has it changed for you over these, you know, two decades?
Well, I think probably because I'm in my 40s and a dad now, it's probably more so self-imposed change.
I get that.
Yeah, I mean, and we're reading articles every week where you're seeing ticket sales are dismal, and people are canceling shows, canceling tours. I canceled one on the last tour, which is, you know, is fine. It was a market I'd never played or hadn't played maybe 20 years ago. And I thought it was just a long travel day. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to cancel it. And there was a couple, it was about 90% good. There was a couple shows that were low attendance, but great shows. Mm-hmm. I think that it's trickier. I'm finding that we're having to work almost twice as hard for the same results in some ways. I find like my manager's overworked. I'm overworked, whether it's creating posters and, you know, I still have a lot of that DIY ethic in my life from the punk rock days, but I'm just I just don't have the energy for all of it anymore. In the world we're living in. And then also like creating content, which like just, I mean, I don't mind doing it, but I don't want to do it every day.
I get it.
I want to do one beautiful thing every two weeks.
Sure.
You know what
Even
I mean?
Even that feels like, for me, it feels like, oh,
it's a
man.
Lot.
I it know, is exactly. a lot. I know, man.
It's a lot. But again, it's like I was having a good chat with Joel about it this morning, actually. And it was basically like, you know, we got bills to pay and we got mouths to feed. So we got to play the game a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, and I just constantly battle with the fact of like, well, do I actually want to play that game? I don't know. The answer is I don't know.
I get
you know what I mean? I want to work. I want to work. And that's my curse, I guess, you know.
Has that always been your curse?
No, because I've tried to play the game when I was younger because I just was steered in that direction and I was moldable and a bit foolish. And
what made you foolish?
Well, I was a traumatized child. Like I came out of my teens and all of a sudden I had a lot of popularity. I'd signed a record deal because of my association with Hot Hot Heat. Because I was just hanging around them and opening shows and they loved me and they were backing me up on my records. And so all of a sudden I was pushed into this I don't want to say it was a machine because it was really good. It was music people and music fans that were running the labels and management at the time. But they were like going for it and they were just steering me in that direction instead of fostering. I hadn't found my voice, so I was imitating my heroes. And, you know, but that's okay. Like, that's normal for young people in their
of
career.
Course.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But it would have been nice to have gone like, okay, you need to work with this producer with a track record in whether it was roots music that they were pushing me into. Uh-huh. I just had no concept of any of that shit.
Yeah,
I was just kind of like,
okay,
great. How do we play more shows to more people?
Right.
And like, get off on it or whatever.
Right.
You know, I was also like deep in an addiction and alcoholism at the time too. So, you know, it was a bit of a hurricane, but then, you know, I got sober and got dropped and like was really out in outer space with no management or no record deal for a few years. And I was pretty low. But in that, I kind of got to discover myself and find out what was really important to me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'd had a couple deals after that were on paper looked really, really good and really exciting. And was working with some really big people in the business, people that were heroes to me. And they turned out to be some of the worst relationships I'd ever had.
Oh, no.
Which basically, to the point where I was ready to quit music. I didn't have any desire to write or to make records. And then it turned around with this silly thing that I had music competitions are silly, but I went and my friend Russ convinced me to do this thing and it was really quite beautiful. But it got me a lot of attention really quickly again. And I was like, okay, here we go again. So that's when I signed with True North and since then, honestly, it's been amazing. Like True North was, I think I got the last really good record deal in the country, to be honest. And that was, you know, in 27
years.
Deal ended. It was a while ago.
Okay.
Yeah. It was a while ago. So my time with them is up and I got my records back and they sold the label, but they were amazing to me and they were really, really good. And they restored my faith in playing music.
Right.
And, you know, and then, you know, COVID came and again, another like wild, wild turning point and chapter in all of our lives. But, I came out of that independently again. And then, recently have signed with Cordova Bay. It's been great. It's, you know, maybe not as deep pockets as True North or something, but so far it's been beautiful. And I don't know, you just kind of meet these mentors along the way that seem to just ignite some sort of creative impulse. And like Joel has definitely been that for me in the last couple of years. You know, he's kind of been a big brother. We talk a lot about a lot of different things with about our music careers and aspects of careers and making art. And I think it's like really just like pushed me to be more creative again and not worry about the commercial aspect or the marketplace of it, and just make something that I really want to make something really beautiful and as true as possible, you know, because it started with that record that he made, One Real Reveal.
That's right.
Yeah.
One mic so he, to take.
Yeah. And yeah. He did some of it here.
That's so cool,
yeah, like
man.
I think he recorded maybe three songs off the record here. And he works out of here a lot. And so to like see his fearlessness with that, I mean, he's so talented in a different way than my talent is. But he, to see that fearlessness and just to go like, oh, I've always wanted to do that, like to be that fearless or to like put it out there. And that's kind of where I'm at now is, you know, I put this record out, Pilgrimage, and it's been beautiful. Like it's been so great to play the songs every night. Like I'm not sick of one of the songs, you know?
Yeah, man.
So I'm pretty lucky that way. Counter Drama.
Time for another tune. Leroy Stagger has a new album out called Pilgrimage, co-produced by Joel Plaskett. Hear Joel singing on this one. More with Leroy after this.
Almost pushing up over, lost and no reason was given. Sleeping rough on the beaches, searching for the old ways of living. Stoned in a caravan, broke down with nowhere. I fell off my bar stool, always the last one to go. Took the long road south, me and my brothers, and man, we were flying. Hauling down from the north, selling songs that no one's buying. I called Derry, London, and man, did the fireworks blow. Almost standing in handcuffs, forgive me, the last one to know. Always the last one to know. the last one to know.
Leroy Stagger with Last One to Know. Leroy is my guest on today's episode of When We Wake.
Man, you've had some major pivots in your life.
Yeah.
Big shifts.
Big where... I think that I was dealt some weird cards when I was really young and like lived through some heavy trauma and could have taken that and driven it into the ground, like yeah. I probably would be dead if I hadn't got sober.
Right.
But then I realized, like, to have that awakening, and it's a slow, slow awakening. I'm 43, and I'm just now getting to a point where, well, I'm also started medication this year, and that's been a game changer.
Oh, that's
I never thought I needed it until I did it, and then I was like, oh my God, like what I've been suffering so for so long.
What changed when you started taking it?
My nervous system just went from like this to just cruising.
Okay.
So, you know, I just would be activated all the time, whether it would be in my music or with my kids or with my relationship. It was just, I was always suffering.
Yeah.
Silently, sometimes not silently, but you know, in a mild anxiety most of the time, to when I hit a wall, which was, you know, last year, where I just couldn't do anything anymore. I couldn't make decisions. I couldn't say yes or no to business things. And I just would like burn out to the point where like I couldn't talk sensibly to my family or to anybody. And it was really, really hard. And it was really, really sad for me. So I finally went to a doctor and I was like, I can't function in this world anymore. And they're like, the first doctor was like, he's like, I don't think you need drugs. He's like, I think you need a career change. And I was like, oh, great. You know, thanks for, he's like, you've been swimming in the adrenaline bath for far too long.
That's what he called
it. And I was like, yeah. And I was like, well, he's not wrong, but I still would like to be able to do this. So how can I do this? You know? And then, I got on an ADHD, diagnosis, and then tried like a really low dose of the drug, and it's completely changed my life. Like I'm just, you know, I'm not pushing drugs. It's just, what I'm pushing is like, if you hit a wall and you can't go on, like you need to get help.
You need help.
You know what I mean? Whether, you know. And for me, it just, the medication seems, for now, I don't know that it will change or whatever, but, I can just deal now.
Yeah.
And I've not lost my creative impulses or creative.
Well, that's
sparks.
Excellent. Right. Cause that's part of the fear.
That
right?
was what I was worried about.
I imagine.
That's what I was totally, but I was also like, I didn't have it anymore anyway, by like being a zombie, you know what I mean? Like hitting a fight or flight or freeze mode, which I was mostly just in freeze. I couldn't read anything. I couldn't like write anything. I couldn't, you know, it was all I could do to just like continue on. And like, that's no fun at all.
It's beyond no fun. It's gotten scary.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah. It really does feel like you don't have, you know, it sounds grim, but it does start to feel like, well, what's the point?
Sure.
You know, other than like getting the kids to soccer practice.
Right.
And, you know, paying the mortgage. It's like, well, I might as well just go work at Home Depot or something.
Well, actually, when that doctor said you got to get out of the adrenaline bath, what were the thoughts? You know, like where what would you do?
I mean, I took it to heart, and I'm still like somebody who I'm not afraid to do anything else. You know, yeah. Like I'm pretty handy.
Built your studio.
I got the studio. Yeah, so I produce a lot of records, but that's like a lot of psychic energy, and I don't know how I didn't realize that.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I've been making records for other people for 20 years.
Yeah.
But I just, like, when this all came crashing down last year, I was like, I've been giving so much of my psychic energy to other artists that it's been, I've been robbing myself. So I'm a lot more pickier about what I'm choosing. I kind of want to make the studio a bit more private these days for now, just, you know, so I can really concentrate on making something of my own. Or if I'm going to do something, I will really want to, you know, Joel comes and works here out of here all the time, and I'm happy to give him my time because I get something back. I get inspired by the way he works. Or there's a few other artists that I'll work with that I like, but I can't remember what the question was, but
the most recent question was when the doctor said get out of the adrenaline.
Oh,
bath,
right.
What would you?
What else would I do? Yeah, no, that's exactly. And it's like, you know, I've threatened to go back to school to become a therapist or environmental leadership was something I was looking into. And then it's like you just look at 4 years of schooling. And it's five years of schooling. Yeah. And as you know, it's like with little kids, you just go, well, am I not doing, like, that's, you know, Joel will say to me, he's like, are you not doing the exact same thing by getting on stage in front of people every night? Like, are you not helping them? And by are you not healing? Sure. Like, and I was like,
do you believe that? Do you? Yeah. Okay, great.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, of course. I mean, I'm healing myself, but you know, I'm pretty vulnerable, as you can see. Like, I don't shy away from talking about stuff because you learn about yourself as you
talk about
let
yourself,
it out, right?
Sure.
You know, you got to be careful. You got to be careful. I've gotten myself into trouble in the past by maybe saying too much because people all of a sudden think they really know you or
that's the world we live in.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah,
of course I do.
Yeah, and it's like, and I'm happy to share my heart with a lot of people, but at the same time, like, Frazee Ford said something to me a couple years ago when I was on tour with her, and she's like, you need to keep something for yourself.
Yeah, there you go.
And I was like, oh, I'd never thought about it. And I was like, yeah, that's really important, actually. You can't give everything away.
And why is it important for you upon reflection?
I think it's impossible to truly know yourself if you're just giving every part of yourself away constantly. You don't get a chance to sit with yourself and reflect on some of the things, for better or worse.
Sure.
You know, you don't get a chance to have a little part of your heart or soul that's just for yourself to, like, be mysterious in or something. Like, if you're just giving it away, you don't ever get a chance to, like, foster it or something. I don't know. I don't know if that makes any sense, but I think that's kind of how it feels.
Yeah, it does make sense.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like in giving of yourself entirely like that, we start to see ourselves, or the danger is we start to see ourselves reflected in those around us because we're giving ourselves to them and we see it all reflected, and I can lose sight of who it is, the real me.
That's right.
I'm just seeing fractions, like reflections fractioned off.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's almost like, you know, when you read too many self-help books, like you forget how to help yourself.
Yeah.
A couple months ago, I cannot read another one of these. It's like at some point you actually just have to go out and do the thing.
I'm sorry, I was a fool. Can we turn the pages back and start again? I spent my whole life swimming, just trying to find my school, thinking they were just around the bend, casting out my line. I cast a little more.
That is my guest on today's episode of When We Wake, Leroy Stagger. I'm your host, Andrew Shaver. Now back to our chat. Speaking of books, I mean, this new album of yours, Pilgrimage, inspired so profoundly by Alistair McIntosh's Soil and Soul, that was introduced to you by the aforementioned pal, mutual pal, Joel Plaskett. Tell me about the introduction of this book to you, and talk to me about reading this book and why it hit you so much.
It was a profound experience for me. I mean, it's been a couple of years since I read the book. I should go back and go through it, but from what I recall, it was his commitment to environmental activism through spirituality, through a spiritual lens, to go, you know, sacred is a word that's not, I'm not afraid of, and I've, it's always kind of resonated with me, whether it's through, you know, ritual as a skateboarder or as a punk rocker. I just didn't understand it, but there was like things that were very, I hold very sacred to me. And as I'm getting older, the planet and the place where I live, that really, really resonates with me. So his idea of saving these places because they're sacred, or seeing the sacredness in these places before we go and bulldoze them over or cut down the forests, was really punk rock to me in a lot of ways. But the other thing is that he asks the reader to go out and find out where you're from and find out the customs where you come from, because we're kind of rudderless culturally. You know, our culture now is capitalism.
Right. When you say our culture, who's our in this regard? Well, like Western society, North America?
Western society. Okay, North America and Western Europe in a lot of ways. We've lost we've lost our way, obviously. We've obviously lost our way here in North America. And his book had a lot of parallels between the Celtic traditions of where, you know, half of my, where I come from, and North American indigenous cultures. And I was like, I'd never thought about that before. Buffy St. Marie, take it for whatever you want for that, said to me a few years back, she said, well, white people have been colonized a lot longer than indigenous people. And I was like, that's, you know, wild for her to say. And then I was sitting with my Cree friend, who's a very wise person, and I told him what she said, and he laughed, and he said, well, she's not wrong. And I was like, what? And he's like, she's not wrong. And he's like, you should look into it. And that's what I did when I learned about Alistair's book and through the Highland Clearances. So all of these, you know, beautiful cultures in, you know, in Celtic tradition were families raised on the land for hundreds and hundreds of years, where communities looked after each other. We lived off of what the land gave us, so farming and fishing, and we had sweat lodges. We had singing. You know, the bardic tradition of storytelling was so big, and traveling from village to village and telling the stories sounded awfully familiar. So in the same way that, like, coastal and living on the prairies for 15 years, the Blood tribe was right, the Blackfeet Reserve was right near us in Lethbridge, and seeing that culture and feeling moved by that culture and not knowing why, that, you know, that singing and that drumming made me feel, stirred my soul just as much as when bagpipes and pipes and drums fire up, to understand that there was a lot of parallels in those cultures. When we were pushed off the land in the 1700s to make way for British sheep, we were pushed into the cities and pushed into factory work, pushed into places we didn't recognize, and moved away from our culture. And he says, you know, you see the addiction, you see the poverty on the streets and in these small towns in northern Scotland and in the big cities. And he said, and he draws the parallel line between the indigenous people in North America being pushed out of their culture, pushed out of their ancestral homes, into these cities, into this way of life that they don't understand. And we just happened to, it just happened to the Celts, I guess, a little earlier. So we're, you know what I mean? So it's like, to see that and to understand that lens and go like, okay, well, what does that mean? Well, maybe it means like we need to go back to some of the old ways. A lot of them need to be left behind, but maybe some of them need to be brought back, like gathering in communities and taking care of one another.
So that's what we should retain. Yeah, the sense of community,
growing food,
and gathering.
Exactly. And like also the ritual of gathering, the ritual of getting together under a full moon or whatever. You know what I mean? It's like...
Sure.
I just think it's a beautiful thing. And when we do that, we understand each other a little bit more. And we don't do that. We don't do that anymore. And I think it's a real shame. And I think that that's why we're kind of in the mess that we're in now.
Yeah, I see. Do you have rituals in your life that you adhere to?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I meditate. In the winter, I light a candle. I get up really early and I light a candle and I meditate in front of it. And I let the light dance on my eyelids, and it kind of speaks to me in this weird way. Like, things show up, or like I make sure to like stop and look at the moon when it's like, when I see it, I stop and I look up and I just go, I go, oh wow, you know, or whatever. And I take a minute to just let something come in.
That's the thing, hey, with a ritual, it doesn't need to be a long, drawn-out ceremony.
I don't think so, yeah.
It can be a moment to look at the moon.
Yeah. Or just to, like, stop and, like, well, how do I feel right now? Instead of just being like, what do I need to, like, take in to, like, give my dopamine receptors something? It's like, how do I feel right now? I feel really good. Well, what am I grateful for all of a sudden, you know? Or, like, just to, like, stop and, like, have a quiet moment.
So when you're on the road, are you able to get up early, light the candle? Is that something that you, yeah?
I tried sometimes maybe, but, you know, like, I also tend to stay with people that have their own rituals, and I see them, and I'm learning still, you know what I mean? I'm learning and go, what's important? Well, it's important to, you know, the other day I was in Blue Mountain, And I walked in, totally crashed my friend Madge's party. And she's like, I don't know, she's in her 80s. Oh. And I said, well, what are you doing? It was a Tuesday. And the house was full of her friends. And Tuesday night at 8 o'clock. And I was like, what are you doing? She's like, well, we're having a party. And I'm like, why? And she's like, to celebrate spring. And I was like, oh, right. And she's like, she was serving fiddlehead salad.
Wow.
And I was like, that's a ritual. Like, that is what we used to do.
Harvest the fiddleheads, have a party.
Yeah. So that was like, okay, I'm going to do that. So now I'm going to have like a gathering in spring. We're going to eat. We're going to like, you know, they're going to drink wine. And but I was like, yeah, that's an old tradition. You know what I mean? And like, that's a beautiful tradition. That's a beautiful tradition.
And here's a beautiful song worthy of that beautiful tradition from his new album, Pilgrimage. This is my guest on today's episode of When We Wake, Leroy Stagger, with Dogwood Flower. More of our chat after this.
Trade my soul for dogwood flower, summer's coming strong. I ain't had a drop in a long, long while, the urge is coming on. Pray that I stay sober, you can't say I've never tried. Men like me are trouble, men like me aren't satisfied. Sell my shoes for a drop, dear friend, you know I'd break your heart. All I know is this darkness, and the dark's my favorite part. Might find someone in springtime, might make it to the fall. Might drink myself to ruins, I won't think of her at all. Salvation, an old means to an end. Down in a church basement, holding hands with friends. Recited from a big book, those who've come before. As long as I stay sober, I'll find an open door. Springtime, might make it to the fall. Might drink myself to ruins, I won't think of her at all. Sell my silver bracelets, I'd sell my old new car. All I know is this darkness, the dark's my favorite part.
Pilgrimage. That's my guest on today's episode of When We Wake, Leroy Stagger with Dogwood Flower.
In Dogwood Flower, you sing Men Like Me Are Never Satisfied. Mm. It sounds like you're getting closer though.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, totally. You know, there's that old Steve Earle song, I Ain't Ever Satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
I toured with them a couple years back, and after
what a thrill.
That tour, I really, really felt like, oh, I understand that a lot. But also like the capacity to change is such a beautiful thing, and like a lot of therapy and you know, a lot of work allows me to go, you know what? Yeah, I actually can be satisfied.
Are you satisfied with this album?
Yeah, I mean, I think so for the most part. Yeah. Yeah.
Are you ever satisfied with your albums? Is
I mean,
that part of it?
It's not really for me to be satisfied with, really. You know what I mean? Yeah.
That's interesting. Like, tell me more about that.
I mean,
yeah.
Like, I don't, that's not for me to listen to. You know what I mean? Like, I got to sit, I have to play, I have to just go out and play the songs, but I'm not going to sit and listen to that record every other day or something like that.
You know, it's so funny. I guess I agree with you. I don't know if you listen to Amy Poehler's podcast ever, Good Hang. I think she's really great at what she does in general, but certainly on that interview podcast, she was talking to Billie Eilish, and, Billy was saying that she does listen to her albums because she's like, if I'm not listening to my albums, who like I want to put on music that I like and I want to make music that I like. So she does listen to her albums. And I thought, all right, I understand the logic, but I can't quite pull myself to like sit down and put my music on. You know,
that's a good question. And it's like, I don't know. I feel like couple years ago I would have said no, I would never be able to listen to my record and be satisfied with it, but now I do feel I do feel satisfied with it. I mean, like, we worked really hard. Like, we didn't make Fleetwood Mac Rumors, but we worked really hard on the songwriting, and Joel took me to task on a lot of it. And he's such a perfectionist, not in like in but he won't, if something doesn't sit right with him, he won't let it lie.
Is that in your personality, or are you more
I'm
the
more
opposite?
The opposite. But I realized actually that going that extra distance would actually make me more satisfied. So I probably won't I probably will only work on my songs like that from now on.
And when you say like that, what do you mean by that? Like that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think it means, well, I stopped kind of like letting lines sit, or like having filler lines. And you're a songwriter too, right? Yeah. So you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. But
I do.
Like, I stopped having those in probably 2 or 3 records ago. In some ways, actually, there's a lot of these songs were co-writes. So there's a lot of Joel as well. Like, my concepts, my ideas, but his language in a lot of it, you know? Mm-hmm. So I guess it inadvertently allowed me to think differently about what I was trying to say
because of the presence of Joel in the songwriting.
Yeah. Process. And to just maybe like, and maybe not everything has to be so long in the tooth, or maybe it does, or maybe I go, well, you know, maybe actually I do need to go a little longer there too, or to see an idea out sooner, or see an idea out a bit more. I don't know. That's a hard one, but it does. I do feel changed, and I don't know how to articulate it as well as I thought, but I think that it just, when you have worked with somebody so intimately like that, it inherently changes what you do.
Yeah. Totally. I want to ask you about one more thing before we go. This has been such a terrific chat, Leroy. I really appreciate it, man. But it would be remiss of me as a fellow radio host. Mm. I heard you say at one point that the first time that you felt moved by art was listening to the radio under the covers as a kid. While, as you put it, you got lost in these little worlds. What was it? Take me to that moment. Under the covers as a little kid, listening to the radio.
Well, I think. You know, I grew up in a really tumultuous house, a lot of anger, and I had to hide out a lot. So at night was kind of my time to burrow. You know, I put the covers over my head and I'd kind of burrow in when I was definitely supposed to be asleep. And I would turn the radio on. My grandpa was in radio for 50 years. So he would, every couple of years, he'd buy me a new clock radio. So I would tune in FM stations from across the Georgia Strait, or the Salish Sea, as we call it now, to Vancouver or Seattle, and just get lost in, they would talk about the songs and they talk about the artists, and you could tell they really, really cared back then. And they'd play, you know, at night on Sea Fox, they'd play Soul Asylum, or you know, on Z95, you'd like Madonna, "This Used to Be My Playground." And you'd just be like, as a 10-year-old or a 9-year-old kid, you'd be like, whoa, this is really spooky. You know, "This Used to Be My Childhood Dream," or whatever. It's just like, what the hell is she talking about? Or Soul Asylum, "Runaway Train," where you're just like, this is terrifying. This is like terrifying music. You're just
I remember feeling that to that song. Yeah.
So I was just fascinated with it. I was fascinated with the DJs. I was fascinated with the music that was happening. And it just kind of removed me from what was happening, I guess, in my home and in my life at the time. And I could just kind of float away on somebody else's art. And, you know, what a gift to be able to do that as a DJ host, as you know, or as a musician, as you know, as well. But, it's just, it's magic. It's really, it's magic. You know, if it hits the right, if it hits the right set of ears, it can be really, really powerful and really, really potent.
I imagine you're doing that for a legion of people, not the least of which are your two kids.
Absolutely. And they're, they're teaching me about music too.
I'm sure they are.
Yeah, it's cool.
Leroy Stagger, such a pleasure to get to chat with you. I really love this new album of yours, and I'm so happy to be playing it on When We Wake. And
awesome, thanks, Andrew.
Well, big thanks to my guest on today's episode of When We Wake, Leroy Stagger. His new album Pilgrimage is now out. From it, this is Carry Me, closing today's episode of When We Wake.
Go on, sweet gift of grace, step into the light. Sorrow's heavy on my back as I walk through this dark night. I guess I've seen the other side. I get it from my mother. She'd go dancing with the fairy kind. She would love me like no other. These times they get the best of me and feelings take their toll. But every night I lay it down and sink into my soul. I sink into my soul. Carry me over the hill. Say a prayer and keep me still. This loneliness, a pale friend, I know someday will shine. I sink inside the daydream that I know was never mine. I called upon an unseen thing. It shook loose at my core. Something deep inside of me I never felt before. I wandered in the wilderness and it almost broke my heart. I ask for all your mercy if again I fall apart. Can I fall apart? Carry me over the hill. Say a prayer and hold me still. If I fall, you know I will. Carry me over the hill.
Down the short set of stairs, join me, Grim, in the basement for my working knowledge of indie, experimental, post-punk, and electronic, every Wednesday from 10 until 11 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM. Get ready to press record.
CFRC is stoked to partner with KPP Concerts on an awesome summer lineup. On June 27th, be sure to catch Long Range Hustle and Psycho.